I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the podcast today, we're going to talk to an old high school friend of Hillary's who has come out with an incredible story.
Believe it or not, finally a high school friend I didn't sleep with. No, I'm just kidding. What? I was a virgin. Who are we kidding?
Well, show you what.
We're going to talk to my friend, Prabhjot Sira, about his life as a South Asian male and eventually turning his hand from tradition and coming out as LGBTQ.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagatkis.
So this week on The Quick, we're going to talk about how Sandra's a terrible person.
Just this week or every other week, I'm not sure. But oh my God, Hillary, I've developed a horrendous horrendous habit during this pandemic.
And what is that?
Well, I've noticed that in the last few weeks, my DMs are constantly firing from dirty, creepy men. I know a lot of women have dealt with the same thing, right? You get DMs from strangers all the time,
right? Oh my gosh,
right?
It's the worst, especially on Instagram. And they're like, that's not who's texting me. Come on.
I know. It's like they're all bots and I don't know what they want and everybody's trying. I don't know what's going on. But for me, it's on Messenger, actually. And I'm constantly being DM'd. And the last month, it's just like, I don't know what's happening in the world that I'm just constantly being DM'd. So now what I do is I just leave it. And when I'm in a really shitty mood, I go off on all of them.
So it's the way you let off some steam because they're pieces of shit. So you can just tell them how you feel.
Right. If I suspect that they're a bot, because sometimes you know they're a bot because they don't have any friends whatsoever when you creep their profile.
Okay.
So I just delete that because I'm afraid of bots because they're all trying to get into my phone and steal my nudies. So I don't want that.
Get your nudies. I don't know. So many of those.
No, it's not. I think I've deleted them all. I'm not sure. So, but if I creep them and I see that they're like people who have mutual friends with me and they live, some of them live in the area. They're Ottawa people. And it's like, what in the fuck do you think is going to happen here? You think you're going to DM me, tell me I'm beautiful and I'm so insecure that we're going to start dating? Come the fuck on. I get so mad. So that's what I respond after a couple of days. And I usually will say something like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
So do you take out like your whole terrible week on them? Like they get all 100%. Of the aggression?
All of it. Absolutely all of it. I'm trying not to take it out on my kids anymore. So I just let it out on strange men and my friggin' messenger.
Well, they're the scum and of the earth. So that makes sense.
I just don't understand what they're doing. Like one of them was the most recent one. He wasn't even my friend. I don't even know who this guy was, but he lived in the area. I guess, I don't know. He said he sends me a note and tells me how beautiful I am and all these compliments because, you know, I'm going to fall for that. And I responded to him, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he responds, why? What are you talking about? They play innocent. Like, I didn't want anything. I just wanted to comment on just that you were a beautiful woman. Is there anything wrong with that? And the backpedaling that goes on. And then I just look like a bitch. And then I basically read the content.
No, you know who these guys are? They're the internet equivalent of the guy on the street that tells you you should smile more. Ugh. Like you're there for
them.
Yeah,
you know what? Well, yes. But then they backpedal because then it dawns on them that it's all in writing, right? And their name is there. And there's a full conversation and they try to act innocent because they don't want to make it seem like they're hitting on a strange woman, which makes them look creepy. So they all backpedal and deny it. And I just tell them to all fuck off. So I don't know if they've learned from it, but I'd like to know this. Has this ever worked on anybody? If you're a woman who's listening to this podcast right now, I know you've received a DM like that before. Like, how do you handle it?
Yeah, it's called the entire show Catfish. Like, exactly. That is how that show happens, okay?
Right.
That's why there is a show called Catfish. Now, because I have to this, ask you a kind of personal question, Sandra. Mm,
tell me.
And I need you to be honest. I know how much you like to be told you're pretty. Is there a little piece of you that kind of loves it?
Well, I mean, here's what I do know. I've often said to my girlfriends, clearly I'm not pretty enough because I don't get any dick pics. Everybody else I know has gotten dick pics but me. So I'm always like, am I not pretty enough? What's going on? I'm kidding, though. I'm kidding. Please don't send me a dick pic. Yeah, it's nice to be told that you're beautiful. But then you think about it thinking, okay, you know that it's a numbers game creep on the other end of the phone. So you probably sent this out to 100 women and said the exact same thing. So no, I don't feel very special.
So,
you know what I mean?
Who's your next victim is what I want to know.
He actually just sent me a DM moments ago. He's a guy that's been sending me a DM now for the last week. Every day he sends me hey, beautiful, how's it going? And whatever. And he's just got about 5 or 6 of them sitting there. So I don't know how to handle him, but I'm sure it'll be nasty and cruel right off the get-go.
I can't wait. Can I see the message history?
Yeah, I know. And if anyone has any suggestions, by all means, reach out to me on social media. I'm talking to the ladies, not the guys that are listening, because I'll tell you to fuck off if you DM me. But if you're a lady, you got a better shot.
So I am very excited today because Sandra and I are going to be joined by someone I have not spoken to in 20 years or so. And yes, I'm sorry to date us both. On the Quick and the Dirty podcast today, my friend Prabjot Sira, who I have not spoken to in a really long time, but he is such a brave and beautiful individual, comes from a very traditional Sikh family, and has now, as an adult, come out as LGBTQ. We couldn't be more excited to have Prabjot on the podcast today. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Yay. Can we start off by saying, first of all, thank you for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it. And now would be your opportunity to dish any dirt you have about Hillary. Just lay it out there. We're all friends here, Prabjot. Go ahead.
Honestly, from everything I've seen following Hillary on social media for all these years and seeing her growth and like broadcasting all that, I'm like, she's legit the same person from high school, just 20 years older.
Like a super nerd is what you're saying.
Like she's like the perfect super nerd that's an extrovert and literally doing what she needed to do from day one.
Well, that was a very nice answer, but in terms of what I was looking for, pretty shitty.
I'm sorry. I have nothing to give you when it comes to that. She's extremely talented. We know that. Like, that goes without saying. And that voice.
Aw, you know? Listen to you. That is so sweet.
But it's very true. That's one of the things that still is a standout for me.
And Hillary, when you went to high school with Prabjot, can you tell us what he was like in high school?
Pretty much the same. I mean, Prabjot was always that beautiful human being that was so welcoming. You were a year or two older than me in high school.
Yeah.
And I can remember being terrified. But knowing that there were other people who were just happy to be themselves, and we sang together in a bunch of different situations, and he was just so talented. The voice that came out of this man, oh my gosh, like it could bring tears to your eyes.
So you guys were friends in high school more than, like, you sang together, obviously, and you were friends.
Yeah.
We
were in a lot of the same choirs and stuff like that. Yeah.
Which meant you had to spend every waking moment together because they were pretty intense. We went to like an arts high school, somewhat, it kind of resembled Fame, but there were less leg warmers.
A lot less. Well, we weren't wearing them. I wasn't at least.
Oh, so cut 20 years later, you guys remain friends on social media. And then one day, Prabjot, you put something pretty incredible on social media. You released a 16-minute video. Hillary told me about this video and she told me how incredible it was, and I watched it, and I have to say that I was so moved when I saw it because I can appreciate the bravery that it took to put something like that on video. So I'll leave it to you to sort of explain what the video was all about.
Yeah, for sure. So what actually had happened is I had one of my cousin's wives is part of this film festival. And they had a day at the film festival that they were sharing personal stories about LGBTQ stories. And so she reached out and she's like, feel free to share. If you want to share, if you don't, you can totally say no. And I was like, I want to do this because I'm a big advocate for, you know, when we all go through hardship and when we all go through anything in our lives, we need to talk about it. Like, there's no benefit of keeping it bottled up and not releasing it. And And so, but I talk about it in my personal life all the time with people. I'm very open about my stuff. And I never actually even thought about it as bravery necessarily. I just like literally was like, okay, I have to do this. And I didn't realize what I signed up for until I sat down and started to talk. And I was like, let me think about what I want to say and how I want to say it and what, you know, just, and I had to keep it to 16 minutes. And so, yeah, I just started to talk, and it was amazing because it really made me think of my journey over the last 5 years of coming out and where I was in 2015 and to now. It's just been insane. And so, yeah, I didn't, and like I said, I never thought of it as bravery. I didn't think of it as anything. I just thought of it as me telling my story. And so it was amazing because I've been getting all these messages, like friends, like family, like, and I'm very publicly out on my Instagram. I don't filter things once again, because I think nobody should feel shame about their life. And so put out what you want to put out, but put out your true self. Right. And so.
Absolutely. Now, yeah. When I knew you, Prabjot, you were from a very traditional Sikh family, mm-hmm. and this wasn't even on the radar, mm-hmm. and you were just kind of doing the traditional thing, getting through mm-hmm. high school. So how did your life from that point change to where you are now? Like, because people listening maybe haven't watched that video. So give us like a little bit of a timeline for you.
Yeah. So for me, a lot of it was, I mean, high school actually was really impactful for me. I mean, we went to high school in the 90s. So, in the video, I even mentioned in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of LGBTQ representation that was positive and like showing you that you didn't have to fit a mold to be gay, you know? And so like we had Will and Grace at the time, we had Queer as Folk at the time. Those are the only two I can even think about. And I couldn't watch Queer as Folk because it was super racy, right? And so at the time, I always say, I've always known I was gay. Like it was one of those things, I was just like, this is who I am. Now, what I choose to do with it is what I choose to do with it. And it always felt like a dirty secret, like that just had to tuck away. And I didn't know anyone that was gay at the time. And, you know, one of my closest friends from elementary school came out to me in my first year of university, I believe. And it was like, okay, love you. This is good. You know, and that's kind of the closest person I had. And then I had another friend come out later. And then I continued my schooling in music, and being in the arts, you see a lot of LGBT people, you know, and being in university, I had moved away. I'd moved to Waterloo. And so at that point is when I kind of started to explore and kind of dip my toe in it, because I had already reconciled it with myself. Right. And I was like, oh, I can start chatting with men. You know, we'll just see whatever happens. But I was curious. And I was in my 20s and, you know, wanting things to happen at that point. Yeah. And then at that point, I kind of put myself out there slightly, but I had legitimately not come out to anyone except for the men I associated with, if that makes sense. So no one in my personal life knew anything. Everybody always suspected. I always had people ask. I always say my personality hasn't changed at all. I just told people I was gay, you know? So it was, and I did come from a traditional Sikh family. The thing about my parents was that I still really appreciate is my parents are very much about, you know, these are our values. Their safety zone was within the culture, within the religion. All of our, like growing up, we grew up in the temple with our family friends are like super close, but everybody grew up in Toronto. We have that sort of crossover of, you know, the East and West connection. But my parents were always kind of open to things. They weren't, I mean, you had to bring them along and show them, you know, the possibilities. But, you know, they had their own biases about certain things. But they were always kind of open, and they never restricted us from, like, going out or doing things or having different experiences. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
It does.
But did you feel pressure to, like, continue along with some of those traditions? And I know that in the video that you released, you talked about the pressure to continue the family.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. So I'm the youngest of four. So I have three older sisters. And my whole life I was growing up. I grew up and it was always like, okay, you're carrying on the name. So, and I've always loved children and I've always wanted children. And So it was like, okay, I want to have kids. This makes sense. And I'll carry on the name. And then my father passed away when I was 21. And so at that point, it really amplified. That's when it was more like, okay, now I have to do everything properly. Right. And that's once that amplified, then I felt like the root of like, kind of like my options were more limited, if that makes sense. But it was like, well, this is what I'm going to do. I know you're going to do it. So you're going to do it, you know, like, and it was just kind of like, it was really reconciling it with myself. And I don't even know how else to say that. In the video, I actually mentioned in my head, kind of what I said to myself was, you know how to make people happy. You can make somebody happy. You can make this woman happy. You can come to terms with the fact that you're never going to have sex with a man again. And that's not important. It's just sex. So if she's happy and I was going to live with my mom, and if mom's happy, I'll be happy. And that's just what it was. And if the sexuality thing is something I give up, that's a small sacrifice for my family, right?
Well,
little did I know that that's not true.
No, it's not true. No, you can only hold a beach ball underwater for so long.
Yeah, and that was the thing. And so when I did get married, I'm not sure if I'm moving too far ahead, but when I did get married, there were so many issues in the marriage, and like every marriage, every relationship has its issues. So many issues, a lot of them stemming around financial, and then there was just things about the marriage that were just wrong. Right. Like, and starting with my sexuality and then going into like my ex-wife had a lot of issues with her mother that were amplified in the marriage. And so there was a lot of fighting, a lot of not being happy. And so it was very challenging for me to try to make somebody happy when she did not want to be happy herself. And so it was like, why did I sacrifice my whole life to be in this situation, waking up with panic attacks and, you know, not being happy, right? And nobody liked her. She didn't like anyone. Like, it was a whole mess of things, right? So it was a challenge. And then it was just like, okay, so I did this to myself now, you know?
You know, it's almost like you sabotaged yourself. Do you ever wonder if that's in your mind subconsciously, that you purposely picked someone that maybe you kind of knew wasn't going to work out with?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because it sounds like that.
Oh, fully. And it was interesting because I've never, like, my parents growing up, my parents had an arranged marriage. They were very much in love. Like, and it was, we only saw them being in love. My parents were, you know, they weren't the most touchy-feely, but like the older and older we got, they got closer and closer. Like when we all moved off to university and my sister got married, and like when we all started our process of becoming independent, my parents were going through their process of getting closer again. They started to date again. Right. Like, aww. And it was amazing. We never saw them fight. We never saw any of that. So going into a marriage or relationship, that's what I thought it was going to be like. Right. And it wasn't until after my marriage dissolved that like my sisters and I, we all sat there and we had this whole conversation about fighting, like, and how fighting is normal. But like, because we never saw it from my parents, we felt like such failures every time we fought in our marriages or our relationships because we didn't know that that was okay. Right. Because my parents.
Well, I think most parents, they do it behind closed doors and it's like a big dirty secret.
Yeah.
But I think what kids need to see is people have fights and then resolve them in
100%.
A public outward way.
Yeah. And 100%. And they and your kids need to know that you're okay, regardless of the fact that you're not agreeing. And I see that difference with my sisters and how they're bringing up their kids. And they will have arguments in front of the kids and they'll let the kids watch it. Right. And in a way, but then they'll reconcile it and then they'll be fine. Like that's part of their process. And they know that that's what they signed up for. And it's wild to know that the kids know that. Right. Because they're getting a whole different set of tools now, which we didn't have. Right. You just felt like a failure because you were fighting and you couldn't make a marriage work. Right. Like growing up, it's like, oh no, you make sacrifices. You make sacrifices. You adjust. But there's only so far you can adjust. Right?
Totally. So you felt,
and especially when you're not being true to yourself. Yeah.
You felt when Hillary alluded to the fact that obviously you felt a lot of pressure as the only son in the family to carry on the name of the family and so on, the tradition, if you will. And you honestly thought that you could live a lie for the rest of your life. You really believe that?
100%.
Yes. So let me ask you something. Did your wife suspect at all? Before you got married, like, was it a surprise to her when you came out?
So before we got married, she thought it, but then I had said something about I grew up with three sisters, so I was always around a lot of females, which I've always been more comfortable around females, growing up specifically. And so she was just like, okay, that makes sense. So she was okay with it too. That was kind of her idea. It wasn't till a year before the marriage ended, we were watching this movie, this Bollywood movie called Bollywood Talkies. And in it, it's a series of short stories. And in it, the husband's gay. You find out that he's gay. And we went to bed that night. And we're both lying in bed. And she looked at me. She goes, you know, that's my biggest fear. And I was like, and in my heart at that point, I was already fucking around. I was ready doing things with men on the side, you know, making excuses for how that's okay because I'm not happy at home. And like, I was already compartmentalizing all that. And I looked at her and I was like, what? There's nothing to be worried about. And it was like one of the hardest conversations I've ever had. And I was like, and little did I know a year later, you know, this was going to happen. Yeah.
How do you feel in yourself? Because I've always known you as like a really open, and you pride yourself on being open and honest mm-hmm. with your friendships.
Yeah.
So how did it feel in that moment? Because in your heart, you knew, even though maybe you hadn't fully reconciled.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
Oh, it's horrible. I remember in that moment just feeling like, I remember my heart palpitating and being like, okay, you need to breathe. Like it was just, it just felt like I somehow... And this is the part that I still don't get. Even like anytime I've read literature or anything about it, like when, like we all have the capacity to compartmentalize things, right? And rationalize them so that it works for us. Right. And somehow it made sense. It was like, I was being open and honest in the marriage, but I had the secret and it was okay because it was going to blow everything up. So I need to keep the secret a secret. If that makes sense.
Right. Would it have been worse if you were cheating with another woman?
My ex-wife said, yeah, at least it was men. That's what she said to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a legitimate question, because if it was, I put myself in that situation too. If my husband was keeping that secret from me and I found out he was cheating with women, I would, you know, kill him. But if it was another man and it was really himself that he was lying to, then I would probably be sad about it and want to help. What was her reaction to finally finding out? Again, I know we're kind of all over the place with your story, but ultimately she found out. And then what was her reaction when she finally knew the truth?
So essentially when I came out to her, we were really close to the end of our marriage. Like we had a discussion about how things aren't going well and how we wanted it. And I was like, by December of 2015, if we're not doing well, we'll stay married, because her brother was getting married in 2016. So we're like, okay, we'll wait till his wedding and then we'll separate at that point. Right. We had kind of talked about it. She had gone back home. Her family was from Edmonton. So she had gone back home and, she went to go visit them because we were kind of in this really tumultuous thing. And then when she went home, she told her parents that we might be getting a divorce and like, this is what's happening. And then when I came out to her, and she blamed a lot of our marriage issues on my mother. She really believed that my mother was too intrusive and stuff, which I do not think was the case. I'm not saying that could not be her version of it, but, and so we were on the phone and she goes, and she was supposed to come back that night, but she extended her ticket for another week. And then I just said, no, she was like, oh, okay, this is, she said, this is, you know, I keep thinking about all these things and, you know, about how we can fix everything. And I was like, okay. And then she's like, you know, when it comes to mom, and I said, that's not the problem. And she goes, what do you mean? I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. Then I remember pulling into a parking lot, because I was driving home at the time, and I pulled into a parking lot and I was like hyperventilating and I said, I'm gay. And her first thing, I think at first she was like, what? Like, it was just like a pause. And then she went to, who else knows? That was a big thing for her.
So managing the reputation was more important than managing the situation.
Yeah. And then it went to, oh my God, what am I saying? How are you? What do you like? Who, like, and I was like, okay. And I didn't even know it was like an out of body experience for me. Yeah. Because her big thing was, like I had mentioned earlier, one of my closest friends from elementary school, he's gay. And so she was like, does Kevin know? And she had her own relationship with Kevin that never made sense to me. She had a huge like issue with him. Does Kevin know? That was the question she asked. And I was like, no, nobody knows. You're the first person I've ever said this to. You know, because in my head, it was like, if I can't say it to my family, I'm not going to live this whole other life, you know, with friends and with friends, LGBT friends, and all these other people in my life will know, except for my family. That's so rude and disrespectful in my head, right? Like, just sex is a whole different thing, right?
Of course.
And it sounds so
but
stupid.
To share and be open with people that you don't love, that would not be a thing.
Exactly. And so, and then first she went to completely supportive for a couple of minutes, and she's like, oh my God, my brother's getting married. Oh my God, I can't get divorced. Oh my God. Like, and then we were kind of went on this journey, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And then I had to work the next day at 7 a.m. And so and we talked for a bit, and then she's like, why don't you go to bed? You have to work early tomorrow. And I was like, okay. I went home, slept for 2 hours, woke up and couldn't sleep. And at that time I was having a lot of panic attacks and stuff like that, which I had never experienced in my life before. So what I was doing is every morning I was going to a Sikh temple because I just needed to kind of feel grounded. So it didn't matter what time I started work. I would go to the Sikh temple before for just like 10 minutes. And so I pulled up to the Sikh temple at 5 a.m. and she called me at 5 a.m. We were messaging back and forth, and she goes, and then she just typed a question which said, have you slept with any other men during our marriage? And that was a message on WhatsApp. And I was like, I'm not typing this. I'm not telling her this. I'm telling her this verbally. I'm not telling her this in paper. If that makes sense, I'm not going to type it in. And so I was like, you need to call me. And I'm literally standing in front of the Sikh temple. And she calls, and I was like, I've had sex with multiple men over the last 4 years. And she was like, okay. And then she just said, so we're getting a divorce, because we hadn't even had a call. Like, up till then, she's like, we're getting a divorce. And then basically she tried to say, then she was like, tonight, no, she's like, on Sunday, I'm coming back. You're going to pick me up from the airport. I'm going to come home with you. You're going to tell mom in front of me. And then this whole thing happened. And then from that point, like, everything shifted and things went back and forth. Then it got a little weird.
Sounds so heavy.
Oh, it was incredibly heavy. It was kind of one of the hardest conversations I had to have. Because of my family, like, when I came out to my family is amazing. Like, they legitimately just showered me with love and support. Like, my sisters are incredible. My brother-in-laws are incredible. They were 100% hugging me. And I remember my one sister said, we're in this together. Let's deal with it. Like, we're in this. We'll figure it out. We don't know how anything's going to go down, but we'll figure it out. Right.
That is so heartwarming to hear that you had your family. I mean, that's all you really need, right? Your family support was the most important thing. But I just want to go back to telling your wife for a second.
Yeah.
When you confessed to all of it and you told her the truth finally, was there any relief inside of you after you finally said, listen, I'm gay, I've slept with other men, that's the truth? How did you feel?
It was weird. It was, honestly, I just remember it feeling super turbulent. There was no relief. Relief didn't really come until, I would say 2 months later. It was a solid 2 months later. It was like November. I remember it was Remembrance Day weekend. And, that's when it came, because, right away, that night it came out to my family. And then one of the things I always do is I have sort of a tiered system in my head of who needs to know, like the people who are closest to me. I always say it's like my allies, like my army of people, you know, the people who need to know who are always there for me 100%. And so I needed to come out to those people first, right?
Of course.
And so literally between Wednesday and Friday, I came out to everyone who I was really close to, my allies. And then I was like, okay, we're good now, right? Like, this is good. I don't want them to hear anything third party. I want them to get it from me. And then 3 weeks after I came out, my cousin was getting married. And So we're at the wedding and my wife's not there and everybody's asking. And I was like, oh yeah, she had to go home. Her mom's sick, blah, blah, blah. You do what you need to do to get out of that.
Oh yeah.
Right.
I've bullshitted my way through a few weddings too.
Yeah. And a lot of our, like our actual family all knew that I was getting a divorce, but nobody knew I came out. Right. So then at that wedding, the groom, so my cousin, I actually told him first. And it was, and he hugged me and he goes, I think I love you more.
Oh.
And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you're not perfect. I was like, I was never perfect. He goes, no, you were perfect. You know, everyone thinks you're perfect. He goes, you fucked up. And I was like, yeah. He goes, I love you more. And I was like, okay. And then now, he kept hugging me. And I was like,
Prabjot, yeah? I have to ask, did you expect your family, like you knew your family loved you and they'd always been by your side, but they were still a very traditional family. Yeah. Like your parents had an arranged marriage. You're very connected to the temple. And these are not traditional values in that culture. Like, did you expect your family to be so supportive?
I was in my head. I knew that they were going to be supportive. In my heart, I would say I knew I was going to be supported. But in my head, I always felt like there is, like, I need to be ready to leave, right? In case, let's say, they say no. But I was also in a position where, like, my mom and I own our house together. I was paying for everything. So it wasn't like I could go anywhere, right? So there was nowhere to go. You know what I mean? And if I had left, mom would have been in a tough situation, right? She wouldn't have been able to carry the stuff. And so I was worried. But what I found the most interesting is like right after, my mother was just so worried about, she was so worried about me. Like she was like, I don't want you to do anything to yourself, right? Because I was all over the map, right? Because I was going through all these emotions, everything. I felt like it literally felt like the world was collapsing around me. And so my mom was afraid that I was going to hurt myself or I was going to do something like that. And I was not there. And I could understand why. So she was more, she went into like protector mode. And so with that, it was, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. I always thought they would disown me growing up, but maybe because of the situation I was in at that time, because I was the primary financial person. My father had passed away. Like there was a lot that had happened before we got there. Right. Like, yeah. Yeah.
There's obviously I won't assume is divorce common in the Sikh community. Again, it's 2020, right? So I don't know.
2020. It's very common now. Like, I mean, the only one that had it, the only one that said anything to me is I have a great aunt that we're very close to. And I saw her when things were ending with me and my ex, and she hugged me. And I remember looking at her because I had been avoiding her because I didn't know how to go in front of her. Like I was so embarrassed, right? And like she didn't even understand what gay was. Like her son told her that I was gay, but they had to tell her what that meant. Like it was that. Like she's 84.
Well, that is right? Old school, like, huh? Wow.
She's 84, right? Yeah. And so, and she just looked at me and she hugged me and she said, and she hugged me. Like she gave me a lot of love. And then she goes, you brought divorce into our house. Like I was the first one in our family divorced. And that's what she said.
Sir, you want your children to grow up and be happy. You don't want your kids to grow up and put on a show so that your great uncles and aunts can think you're happy. It's listen, I get it. I grew up in the patriarchy too. And I grew up in a traditional Greek household. And I know what it's like.
Very much the same. Yeah.
Right. So you talk about how that, you know, divorce is now very common in the Sikh community. How common is it to have people in the LGBTQ+ community come out in the Sikh community?
So that is not common.
This is what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah. So actually, that's where, like, for me, it was a blessing that I started to work for the wedding photographer that I mentioned earlier. So Bengus Studios, I met him. In general, anytime somebody gets married in our like family or extended or like really good friends or whatever, I generally tend to run the wedding. It's just what I do and I do it really well. And so I was running his wedding and I ended up meeting this photographer who was like, oh, who do you work for? You're like one of the best planners I've seen. And I was like, okay. and I didn't know what I was doing, but I was still kind of hiding in the community. Like, even though I knew everyone knew, I was telling like my peers, so like the people who are my age that I was close to growing up, they all knew, but like I never said anything to any aunts and uncles or anything like that, right? And I remember kind of having this shroud over it. And then when this photographer hired me to do all the sales and service, the majority of our clientele was South Asian. So he literally said to me, we want people to come to us and we want to tell their story. So we're asking them to be raw with us when we sit down with them, right? We're getting deep and personal with them. So you have to get deep and personal with them, right? Like, you have to share your life with them. You have to tell them you're gay. You have to do that. Like, we don't want surface shit. We want to get real with people, right? And so he really pushed me to like put myself out there, which really healed me with the South Asian community, which really reconciled that piece, which I didn't realize. Like, I avoided them like the plague, right? For a while. And then because I ended up working there for 3 years, you know, like the couples would come in, we would talk, I would say something about someone I was dating or whatever. And then, you know, like it was in the conversation. Like, I would put it out there, right?
Did being accepted by strangers help you accept yourself in a bigger way?
It wasn't necessarily being accepted by strangers. It was being accepted by the community. And so, yeah, in a way it did, because I find the biggest gift about coming out is that when you come out, everybody else comes out to you too. So everybody has some kind of coming out to do, right? Everybody has some bullshit that they're covering up or that they're trying to live up to.
Preach.
Right? No, but it's true. It's
You're
so
right.
True.
You're so right. Right. Yes.
And it's like, as soon as you say, hey, here's my shit, everybody goes, oh my God, let me tell you about my shit. Right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing because you create that environment, right? Like, and like, I always think of like this one couple, this couple that came in, they had been together for 13 years. He was Hindu Gujarati and she was Sikh Punjabi. And she was like from a super traditional Sikh family. They had, you know, everybody wore turbans. They were very religious. Like, and so she was the oldest in her family. And I remember talking about me being gay and she started to tell me all about how she basically just told her parents 13 years later about this guy she's in love with and hasn't even been able to tell them that she's been with him for 13 years. He's been patiently waiting for her to tell her parents. And, you know, like,
wow.
And they're finally getting married. And it was like, and she goes, and basically the dad is like, we're getting you married in 3 months. Like, I don't want anyone to know. And blah, 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 right? It was very much like that. And I was like, girl, so this is what you're going to do now. Right? So we looked at that. And I was like, you're walking around wearing his engagement ring and you love him. Like, I can see how much you love each other. He's so patient. He's so kind. He's giving you your space. But you need to step up for him too. Right? You need to honor him. And she goes, yeah. And it was around Christmas. And she goes, yeah, my cousin's having a Christmas party. I was like, have any of your cousins met him? She goes, no. I go, do they even know you're engaged? She goes, no, because my parents aren't ready. And I was like, screw your parents at this point. You're engaged. You're getting married next year. They're all going to find out. Right? I was like, take him to the party.
He's been your dirty little secret long enough, you know?
Yeah. I was like, take him to the party. And she called me. I hadn't even booked them till a month after that. And she called me afterwards. She's like, oh my God, I took you to the party. It was the best thing that ever happened. And I was like, because everybody was so great. And it was just, and those moments of like people just putting it all out there and you putting it out there and you're able to tell them, this is the mess that I lived through. If I could stand through it, you can take them to a party to your cousins that are going to be so excited. Right?
And then you look back on these things and you think, well, it was such a no-brainer, but we build it up like we're so afraid of what people's reactions are going to be that we cater our lives to that. And that's so wrong.
Well, it's so funny because I think the thing that it does, it challenges you in every aspect of your life, right? Like, even like the more and more I think about, like lately being an LGBT, we talk a lot about like transgender or gender in general. Like, what does gender mean? What does it mean to be a man? Like, what is my version of being a man, right? And I just realized that none of that matters. Like, gender is not even a thing. You know, the way we're talking about like equal opportunities with Black Lives Matter happening now, which I think is really important, but it's the same thing. Take color and take gender out of the equation in this world, we are legit all the same. opportunities shouldn't lack based on gender or gender or color or sexuality. Like, none of that matters.
That is so true.
Like, remove it. Gender is not even a thing. The only thing gender represents is procreation. Like, what part of the procreation process you're part of. That's it.
Prabjot, that's actually one of the questions I wanted to ask you.
Yep.
Because you had talked about when your father passed away, how you felt this incredible weight and duty to procreate. Mm-hmm. And this is sensitive because, yeah, you know, you and I are at the same age.
Yes, exactly.
And I would hate somebody to ask me, but I'm going to ask you.
Go ahead.
Do you think that kids are in your future?
So I do believe kids are in my future. Now, when, which, you know, I'm 44 right now. So it's a tough one because, like, I've always said I don't want to have a child without a partner. Like, that's something that's something that's important to me, right? Currently, I'm dating someone actually really seriously. Like, we live together now and stuff. But he's a lot younger than me. He's 16 years younger, so he's 28. He's in a very different place in his life, so like children on his radar are in a different way, whereas mine feel a little bit more immediate, right? In what capacity? I think that's what's changed for me. Like, I definitely don't think I'm gonna have my biological children at this point. I think I'm gonna have my children, but they're not gonna be my biological children, right? Like, they'll probably be adopted or like, I always think foster care might be a thing.
With your partner's like, DNA.
Well, I don't even think, like, I love babies, but I don't feel like I've missed that. Like, because I have four nephews and two nieces. And, like, my last niece, like, when I came, actually, it was hilarious. When I came out, we found out my sister was pregnant 2 months after, right? In all the chaos of me coming out. So we always refer to Syra. If you look at my Instagram page, she's everywhere with me. She's like my birthday baby. She was born 2 days before my 40th birthday. And she's legitimate. She was like such a gift of healing to our family. And because she shifted, like, she was a new member and she shifted our family. And it was interesting because when my dad died, my oldest nephew was born, Theron, who's 23 now, 22. And he kind of did the same thing at that time. So where there was like this huge healing. So I was a really a huge part of their childhood. Like, I took care of them. I never had, like, their moms would do stuff and I would just have them. So I don't feel like I missed out on the baby experience, maybe not full-time experience, but I'm okay not having full-time baby experience. if that makes sense. Like, I mean, you know, I talk about,
oh, I hear ya.
I always think I talk about potentially adopting like someone older. And one of the things that was always important for me was if I adopt a child, I want the child to be of the age of one of my nephews or nieces so that they have peers. Right. And so right now, luckily I have a pretty massive range of mine. So, which is anywhere from 4 till 22. Right. So it's a pretty decent range. And Chris, my boyfriend, has a niece who's 5. And so I'm always like, that's something that's important to me if that ever happens. I do see children. I just don't know how and when. If that makes sense. I always think,
hey, I ended up with two stepkids. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Like, I just know I need children in my life because that definitely does feel like a void for me. But I've also, like, when I was married, we did try a bit, but never... It never happened. And the last 5 years have been like a shit show. So now I'm like, I feel like at this point, I'm kind of like, especially with COVID, I think all of us are doing this. We're reassessing and thinking of, you know, where do we want to be? How do we want our lives to look? And I mean, like, you know, in my head, like every other day, if you ask me, especially going on this career journey right now, I'm like, oh, I think I want to go back to school for this, right? But I think school's in my closer future. So I'm like, if I don't have kids, I can't imagine myself not having kids. But I mean, you never know, right? Never say never. You know?
I wanted to ask you,
all these children in my life.
Now that we're on the topic of kids, mm-hmm. You talk about, you know, you grew up in a community that you didn't feel that you were in a place where you could come out and tell your truth until much later in life.
Yeah.
What do you think it would be like now for, again, it's 2020 and a few years have passed since you came out. Where do you think the community is now in terms of LGBTQ plus support? Are there other, you know, I mean, is that still is it a safe place for kids to come out?
I honestly think it's really specific to the families at this point, right? Like, I think as far as community, you know, I think everyone knows someone who's LGBT, right? Like,
yeah.
Part of in that LGBTQIA spectrum, right? Like, I think everybody knows somebody who is at this point. So I think it's fairly open. I think it's really important for me as a South Asian gay man to be sure that I'm talking about it and I'm having conversations and I'm able to say, you know, to my nephews and nieces, to my cousins, kids, like all the kids that are in my life, I want to be sure they know. And I want to be sure they know how their parents reacted. I want to be sure, you know what I mean? Like, those things are important to me. Like, I think, like, my nephews, I had a sleepover at my place with my two nephews and my niece. They are 13, 12, and 11. And they were all here, and we walked over to Church Street, and we were, like, eating lunch on Church Street. We're sitting there, and I started to tell them about how, like, Church Street was a gay space that was, you know, safe for all gay people, and that's why a lot of us still have this, but people don't believe it needs to exist now. Because this is something that's happening right now where the full street, a lot of people don't believe is a thing anymore because you don't need that kind of closeness because we are in a different state of acceptance. So a lot of the younger gays, like in their 20s and stuff, aren't even necessarily coming to Church Street in the same way that we were before, right? Because it is more accepted. And I said to my nephew, you know, and I said, it was only 2005 when gay marriage was legal. And he looks at me and he goes, what? I was like, he goes, you're telling me, and he's 11, you're telling me that you couldn't marry your boyfriend? And I'm like, no, we weren't legally allowed to do that. He goes, that doesn't even make sense. And I was just like,
oh, that's
yeah.
so sweet.
And it doesn't make sense. He's right.
And I just, and he was just like, and it was just, it boggled his mind. Right. And I don't know if you've ever seen that Hillary Clinton documentary on Amazon or anything like it is. And she talks about how, like, when she talks to young kids, how some of the girls are like, what do you mean a girl's never been president? Right. It's like that same idea. It's like, how is this even the thing we're talking about? Right. In 2020. Right. And so it's that kind of, I love that that was like his thought, like, how is that possible? That's not even a thing. Like, I've been told I can do whatever I want in the world. There should be no limitations. So why is there limitation? And that was that.
Prabhjot, yeah. I want to take you back a little bit. And I know we're kind of all over the place with this story. But it's a question that I didn't get a chance to ask.
Okay.
So, and it might be a little bit difficult. You lost your dad at 21.
Yes.
And you came out several years later.
Yeah, 40.
Do you think things would have been different if he were around?
So I always say, like, around that time when he passed away was kind of when I was kind of just starting to come into my sexuality, when I was just starting to, like, explore and, like, poke around a little bit. I do believe I probably would have come out in my 20s had he been alive, because I also wouldn't have had, like, the weight of, like, my, you know, moving home and taking care of mom and, like, all of that part. Like, I would have had it, but it would have still been more flexible, right? In the sense of, you know, at that point, too, like, the reality, too, is at that point, I wanted to sing professionally. That's what I wanted to do. That's where my life was. You know, and the minute Dad passed away, it was like, no, you need to have a responsible job. You need to, you know, you need to earn a regular income. You can't chase these dreams.
That's
right?
So much the opposite of what I would have thought.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think, like, a lot of people would think if Dad's around, Dad's the big thing that you're worried about. He's the one that you're worried is not going to be accepting. But it's such an interesting cultural shift that having to take over the role of the head male in the family added more pressure than having Dad around.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I think one of the hardest things to hear, especially like when I came out, I remember my mom saying, I'm just glad your dad's not alive for this. I remember her saying that, and I remember that hurting. I don't know how she feels now in that way. Like, I mean, my mother's wonderful in so many ways. Like, Chris, my boyfriend, comes over now. Like, she stayed with us a couple of times. Like, she's great. She's immersed in my life. Like, she, and I've always been apprehensive on how they come over and stuff. Like, my mom and my, like, it's even like a couple of years ago at New Year's, I always host New Year's at my place. And I have a one bedroom plus den, and it's packed in here on New Year's. And my mom and my sister and my brother-in-law decided to come. And because they were like, we don't know what we're doing for New Year's. And I was like, I'm hosting a party. And she's like, and my sister was like, okay, we're coming. And to me, it was such a huge deal. Like, you're going to be around all my gays. Like, these are my people, right? Like, I'm gonna, you know, like, it's a whole different section of who I am, right? Like, not who I am, but it's a whole different section of what I am with you guys to a certain degree, but it really isn't. That's the one thing I realized. So I was, you know, my mom and my brother-in-law got like trashed. It was perfect. Like my friends, like a couple of my friends, I was like, just be sure we keep topping them off, right? This is how I'm going to manage it. And my sister said to me, you know, it's so funny because I never even thought about how you were thinking we're coming to your house and everyone there is going to be gay. She goes, in my mind, it was, I'm coming to my brother's house for a New Year's Eve party that he's having. Right. And I was like, okay, you know, but so my mom was here. She was like fully immersed in everyone. Like, I have some South Asian gay friends as well. They, you know, everybody was coming over to her and talking to her. Like, everybody made a point to meet her and talk to her, which I thought was so great. So my mom's like literally seen my life, like full-fledged. Right. So it's, we've come so far now. Right. She still, and it, quite frankly, she still says that she has her own coming out to do when it comes to me. She needs to be able to say it in the community proudly that she has a gay son, right?
Right.
I am not hiding it, and I've always said this to her. I'm done hiding. I'm not hiding it. I'm going to talk about it whenever I can. So I actually didn't even tell her about the coming out video. My sister did. My mom's like, what did you do on it? What did you say on it? And so I was like, you have to watch it. Like, if you want to know, you have to watch it. Right. And she's like, okay. And she's like, what did you put it on? Like, so she's still a little bit afraid of that whole, what are people going to think? But it's more about what are people going to think about my son? Right. Like, cause he's not living up to all these expectations. And my mom herself, right, as is going through her own processing. Right. Because her whole life, it was, I was going to take over the house. I was going to live with her. And now my sister's there with her kids and her husband, and they're the ones with her. Like, she's living the life that I thought she would be having with me, with my sister. Right. I moved out. So it's just, things have shifted. Right.
That must be really hard for you. Like, it seems like you're very level-headed about it and about waiting for her to be okay.
Yeah.
I think that would be really difficult, but you're very level-headed about it.
You know what it is? She doesn't stop me from being me, if that makes sense. Like, I really believe that about her is about her, right? It's not going to stop me. Like, if tomorrow Chris and I decide to get married, I'm going to have my wedding. I'm going to have the people I want there, and she's going to be there, and I know she'll be there, but you know, and that might be where she needs to get, right? Like, I didn't even say this in the video, but like 72 hours after I came out to like some of my cousins, one of my cousins came out to me, right? And then he came out,
wow,
to family, right? Which we've all known. It was so obvious. It's so obvious. And like, I came out to him, I'm telling him everything. And then the call, and then at the end, he's like, okay, I got to go now. Blah, blah. And I was like, don't you have somebody to tell me? And he goes, yeah, I am. And I was like, okay, but he still essentially lives like a closeted gay man. Like, he doesn't talk about it.
Right.
He doesn't share, like, the way I'll sit down with, like, he has a brother who I'm very close to, and he's literally, I'm going to use toxic masculinity as an example. Like, he's just very much a guy. He's a guy's guy. But with me, he'll go on, he'll have all kinds of experiences. He'll go to gay bars, he'll do everything with me. But with his brother, he won't. with his gay brother. He won't. Right. Gay brother's always like, why does he do everything with you and not with me?
Well, you understand that it's a journey. Everybody has their own journey. And I think that's where you are getting at with your mother. Yeah. She loves you unconditionally, but the way she handles the outside world, if you will, outside of your family, that's her journey to take, not yours. And you can't control that.
No, and literally, like, she goes through her own process. Like, sometimes I think Chris has changed a little bit of it because Chris is now around and he's very much a part of it. Up until, I would say, like, even last year, occasionally, like, somebody would be like, oh, there's this girl. Tell him about this girl. You know, this girl's really nice. Blah, blah, blah. My mom still has this whole thing that maybe if I married a different girl, it would have been different, right? And so she still has that stuff going on in her head, which I think she's kind of come to terms with it. And, like, even at times she's, like, said, and this was much earlier on, she said things to my sister like, you know, he's around all these gay people now. Maybe that's making him gayer, right? Like that kind of idea.
Right.
And you know, and so that's why I mean, like, she needs to come out herself. She needs to come out. She needs to her, she still associates the word gay with being dirty. Right. And it's unfortunate, but, she's 72 now. I'm not going to push her. Like, I feel like I've been challenging her my whole life. She's always come on the journey. She always jumps on at some point, you know, and she will. And like I said, it's not like I have to, you know, like, for example, like when Chris told his parents about us, and he comes from like a very Christian background, and he told his parents about us, and his dad said, I'm fine with him coming over, which I've been at their house many times. I'm fine with him coming over, but I don't think I can be at any celebrations. So if we get married, his dad basically is not going to come.
Ugh.
Right.
But that is your reality. And none of that stuff matters. You found someone that you love. You've come so far in the last 5 years. Like, you have come so far. And
oh God, yeah.
We can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast today, Prabhjot. I'm so happy that I got to talk to you, because I saw your video and it was very moving to me. I'm only sad that you didn't talk more shit about Hillary, honestly. You really had an opportunity there, and you blew it.
I should have pulled out a yearbook and, like, I know, man. Like, I feel like happy.
She was a mess.
Oh my God. Yeah, my one eyebrow. Can we talk a minute about my high school unibrow?
Oh, Jesus, girl.
Ooh. I don't recall you having a unibrow. You had nice, luscious eyebrows.
You're such a positive force. You really are. And I think that you're a role model. I know it's not something you signed up to be, but you sound like someone that, you know, people want to talk to and they want to share their stories with. And I imagine that you're so open to that, and you love it.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it's that constant battle, right? Like, you want to be sure. Actually, Hillary said earlier about me being open and welcome, right? Like, I always say, like, one of the things I hated when I first came out to the bars, and I came out and I was like around all the time. People don't talk to you. Like, people have their clusters of friends and they don't jump in. So when I got my cluster of friends, I literally find the strays. And I say this all the time. Like, I'm at the bar and I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And I'll just start talking to people. Right. And I'll literally bring the strays who have no one with them, and they'll end up with us for the night. Right. And that's just kind of what I do.
That sounds so lovely. You're so kind. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We are running out of time on this podcast.
Thank you for coming on the podcast today, Prabhjot. And it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks so much.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.